Chapter 16, about the Kong which was not walled in. "What are you doing there?" asked Bator's mother, who had been visiting the Shensi people behind the hill of the well and had bartered the sheep to them. "Are those your friends?" "Yes," said Bator, "these are my friends, and we are resting a little. You must speak Chinese to them, else they won't understand you." "What are your names, children?" asked the mother. Big Tiger and Christian told her. "You can call me Etch. Etch means mother. And as you have no mother here, I'll look after you. Otherwise you'll do silly things." "These very grown-up people, no silly thing do," Bator explained. "Bator," called Dogalon. "Hi, where are you hiding?" "I'm here, but I'm coming," answered Bator. "And we," Christian offered, "may we help to load?" "Come with us," said the mother. And then they all went to Dogalon, who had already saddled the lead camel and tied the others together. Dogalon took the reins of the lead camel. It stood up, and the others also stood up. Dogalon then led them skillfully, one after the other, through the lane of packs, and when the lead camel stood between the two sacks of flour which it was to carry, the other eight stood each in its proper place at the correct interval between the bales and the tied-up wooden poles of the felt tent. "Zook, zook!" cried Dogalon, giving two short pulls to the halter of the lead camel. It knelt down obediently, and the other eight did likewise. "Take this stake and stick it through each of the ropes," said Dogalon to Christian. "Bolna," said Christian, and Dogalon praised him, saying he already spoke Mongolian quite fluently. The loading then began. Dogalon and Bator worked together. At each side a pack was placed upright, laid against the knee, then raised a little, and soon, to right and left, each at the same time, a pack was secured to the camels' backs. Christian grasped the slip ropes, pushed them in between the humps, and ran the stake through them. The load then lay fast. Big Tiger, meanwhile, holding the camel by the halter to prevent it from standing up. In 10 minutes the little caravan was ready for the road. "We're off," said Dogalon. "May your way be easy and good." "Goodbye, children," said the mother. "I'm sorry I cannot look after you, but don't do anything silly all the same. Come, Bator." "Dear mother," whispered Bator. "Little son," said the mother, "I see you want something." "I want," answered Bator, and then he spoke very quickly in his own language, pointing appealingly to Christian and Big Tiger. When Bator had finished speaking, Dogalon looked at his wife, and she looked at Dogalon, who stood there unable to decide whether to say yes or no. At last the mother said, "Bolna, he may stay behind a while." "But only until daylight," said Dogalon, mounting the lead camel and riding slowly forward. The others followed, and the mother rode behind. "Do not forget your promise," she warned her son. Bator took one of the camels by the halter and went with Christian and Big Tiger behind a snowdrift. There they could not be seen, but could watch the inn. Before long, two horsemen emerged. One was carrying the umbrella, and the other the banner unfurled, and it looked impressive, although it was dark and one could not read the words on it. The two horsemen were followed by five others. Then they heard the living Buddha's carriage rolling through the gateway. Dogalon dismounted and kowtowed, and the prince, who was riding his white horse beside the carriage, gave a friendly nod. The train of pack camels followed, and when they had passed, Dogalon and his wife joined on with their train. The caravan disappeared in the darkness. They could hear the creak of the gate, and Big Tiger said anxiously, "The servant is pushing the bars in front of it." "How shall we get in again?" asked Christian. "Hamaga," replied Bator, "need no worry at all." He took a thin, firmly plaited rope of goat's hair, of which many were hanging on his saddle, made the camel kneel down, and wound the rope 3 or 4 times around its left knee. "Sit there quietly," he said, scratching the camel behind the ears. "Don't try to stand up. We're not going yet." Then he turned to Christian and Big Tiger. "Present time, splendid begin intended work. You and you, no more word lose, no smallest sound make. Our work hurries," he explained, pointing to the morning star. "Better act quickly than words say." Hiding his hands in his sleeves, he walked boldly up toward the inn. Christian and Big Tiger followed, though they had no idea what he was up to. The camel raised its head and looked after them. "Very good camel, know well something going on," whispered Bator. Christian whispered back that he did not know what was going on, but Bator did not enlighten him. When they arrived at the wall which Bator had climbed up before, they turned around to the next corner instead of going on. Here the wall merged into the back wall of the inn premises. There were three square holes in this wall, a few feet from the ground. Two of them were smoke-stained, and in front of these lay a heap of snowed-over firewood and brushwood for warming the kong inside. Bator now walked very cautiously, making signs that they should be frightfully careful. When he reached the first hole, where there was no firewood and no smoke-stained edge, he stopped, signed, then pulled off his fur coat and laid it on the ground half inside the hole to smother any sound. "The room with the kong, which has not been walled up, is over this hole," whispered Christian, and Big Tiger nodded. Bator, who had already knelt down, put his finger to his lips warningly. One after the other, they crept on all fours into the dark hole, which widened into a little cave in which they could, with difficulty, sit bent down. Round poles and crossed rafters formed the roof. In between them, straw had been stuck and plastered with clay, but the work had been badly done, and the chamber would never have heated the kong. Bator angled in his fur coat and laid it over his shoulders. Then they all waited for a sign of life. They were quiet as mice, and nothing could be heard but the breathing of two sleepers, Good Fortune and Green Coat. Once one of them turned in his sleep, and there was a dull thud. Evidently that was Good Fortune, who did not take off his pistol holster even at night. Then all was quiet again until a soft sound of groping fingers began. It was frightfully exciting, because something might happen any moment. But nothing happened. Now and then Bator bent forward and looked out to see if it was nearing daylight, just when one might think that the sky was not quite so black, and the snow not quite so gray, and that the stars were getting a little paler, and the night nearing an end. The door of the room above opened, and someone stepped in cautiously. Instantly the fingers ceased their groping. They all heard this, and none of the three dared to breathe, so great was the silence, and so loudly did their hearts beat. "I wish your excellencies rest and comfort," said Hailstone. For a moment all was silent as before. Then they heard Good Fortune saying irritably, "It's still the middle of the night. Why are you disturbing us?" "Be off with you," snarled Greencoat. But one could know by his voice that he had been awake already. "He who goes out the door and the gate will have reason to lament," remarked Hailstone meekly. "What do you mean?" cried Greencoat, and one could observe that he had sat up, because little bits of clay fell from the roof onto Christian and Big Tiger's necks. "Get out!" shouted Good Fortune. "Have you never heard that the sleep of man is sacred?" "I will come again when the cock crows," said Hailstone. He went off, affronted. "That old clown always comes at the wrong time." "But he wanted to say something," remarked Greencoat. "Something wise, no doubt," said Good Fortune contemptuously. "Quiet there. Perhaps it was something important, and you stopped him with your roaring from coming out with it." "You roared like a bull yourself," said Good Fortune. "Are you trying to quarrel?" inquired Greencoat. Good Fortune turned the conversation into another channel. "No," he said, "I don't want to quarrel with you. I'm out for something else. You promised me a payment on account as soon as we reached Whitestone. We are here. What about it?" "Aha," said Greencoat. "So you want money, do you?" "I want 200 silver bots." "Everything must be done in the correct order," said Greencoat. Admonishingly, "As soon as it's daylight, I'll go and find Doggalon. He's a scoundrel who lives here and owes me 10 camels. Being a sly fellow, he's always cleared out when it came to paying up. But Hailstone told me last night that he's here all right, so I'll catch him this time. And the fellow may count himself lucky if I agree to settle for cash instead of taking the camels, and then you'll get your due." "But what if this Doggalon has no money?" "He has got money. Be sure of that. These Mongols are misers. Every one of them has got a heap of silver on which he sits tight." "If that's the way," replied Good Fortune, "he won't give you any money." "He'll have to. I have a warrant for his arrest in my pocket from the Amban in Kalgan. Good Fortune laughed. This Dogalon will have a good laugh at you when he sees the warrant. For who's to arrest him in White Stone, huh? Why, you, of course. You wear a uniform, and you've got a pistol. So you'll arrest him. No, I won't. I'm a soldier, not a policeman, and I don't meddle in other people's affairs. But you'll just come with me to frighten the fellow? Very well, I'll go with you, said Good Fortune after a moment's reflection. And you'll give me the 200 bahts immediately afterwards. I'll give you the 200 silver bahts, said Greencoat very slowly and emphatically, even if the car has greatly lost in value. It seems to me, said Good Fortune, that it's you who are trying to quarrel with me now. That's because you no longer seem to know what we agreed. Our agreement was that the truck should be in the condition it was in when I saw it in Hue La Sien. Since then, it has changed. It has one headlight less, that's all. You can buy a new one anywhere. Not here. Good Fortune growled an answer which sounded like, go to the devil, and all was quiet again. Batur grinned with satisfaction, but Christian was freezing and would have liked to be in his warm sleeping bag. He looked out to see if it would soon be day, but then Greencoat began to talk again, and Christian quickly forgot his cold feet. He even got warm and his face got red from sheer excitement when Greencoat said, there's something else I must speak to you about. Out with it, said Good Fortune. I wonder what your something else is. Those two impudent kids, began Greencoat. They sit in the truck as if they belonged there. But they don't belong there, and you must throw them out somewhere. The Gobi Desert is big. How is it, asked Good Fortune, that you're suddenly taking such a friendly interest in the boys? I'll tell you why. We've agreed that you give me the truck in Sing Sing Xia. We have agreed, Good Fortune interrupted him, that the truck is to be stolen in the night at the inn in Sing Sing Xia, and I'm to know nothing about it, and that you then quietly give me 1,000 silver bahts. That's our agreement, and there's no something else over and above that. Listen to me, said Greencoat. There's no listen to me either, Good Fortune interrupted him roughly. Very well, said Greencoat maliciously. I'll tell you what there is. There's an Amban in Kalgan, and there's a judge in Mao Mu, and besides, there's the army court-martial. All three will be pleased to make the acquaintance of a former member of the Red Mountain Robber Band. When you take that line with me, cried Good Fortune, his voice trembling with anger, you don't notice, you old turnip-face, how ridiculous you make yourself. "'It ill becomes you to speak like that,' said Greencoat coldly. "'A lot could be said there,' said Green Fortune scornfully. "'Two words from me, and we'd both be in the same boat. "'You could say as much as you'd like, but no one would believe you. "'We'll assume, shall we, that there's a certain honorable trader "'who, believing he's dealing with honorable gentlemen like himself, "'bought goods a few times from you crooked bandits of the Red Mountain. "'Such things happen, but they're not crimes by a long shot.' The good man was simply deceived. But if later on he meets one of the lawbreakers of those days, then he does a public service in denouncing him. I believe the honorable merchant would actually receive a reward. Don't you think so? Christian and Big Tiger, who had been taking in every word, began to tremble, and it was not only the cold which was making them tremble. It was because their hearts were in their mouths, and because they expected that at any moment Good Fortune would jump up, fall on Greencoat, and murder him. But nothing of the kind happened. True, Good Fortune gnashed his teeth and muttered, "Dog, traitor, black-faced rascal," until suddenly, with a laugh of relief, he slapped his pistol holster. "Here's the reward for the honorable merchant," he cried, "and he can have it any time." Greencoat did not seem to be alarmed, for he laughed too, and his laugh had a contemptuous ring. And just as he was beginning to say he was not afraid of a pistol, a cock crowed in the courtyard. He coughed a few times and then said placatingly, "That sheep-faced fellow will come in again at any moment. Be reasonable, Good Fortune, and I'll explain to you another time why we must get rid of those impudent lads." "Your speech is long and full of error," retorted Good Fortune.
"You'll agree later on that I'm right," said Greencoat. And then they heard Hailstone coming along the corridor, and as the cock crowed a second time, he walked in. Greencoat pretended to be annoyed. "Is that you again?" he asked, yawning loudly.
"I have come to ask whether I shall saddle the horse Han Khan for the honorable gentleman. I also wish your excellencies a successful morning's business."
"What's this jabber about the horse Han Khan?" asked Greencoat.
"He's the fastest horse in my stables. Perhaps he could overtake Doggalon."
"What's that you're saying?" cried Greencoat, jumping up. "Do you mean to say that Doggalon is gone?"
"That's just what I have to say," declared Hailstone.
"The scoundrel!" shouted Greencoat. "They're all scoundrels, and you're another. But Doggalon isn't going to slip through my fingers like that. I'll get the money from his wife."
"Doggalon has taken his wife with him," reported Hailstone calmly. "And the yurt, and all the camels. The chest was packed up, too, so he didn't leave his silver behind, even though he was in a hurry. His leave-taking was without ceremony."
"Oh, you accursed blockhead!" cried Greencoat. "Why didn't you tell us this sooner?"
"Keep your shirt on," Good Fortune interjected. "We'll soon catch up with Doggalon with our car."
"I didn't think of that," said Greencoat. "That's all right, Hailstone. You may go."
"I may go, but duty bids me say two words more to your excellency."
"Don't talk nonsense. I know enough."
"It's easy to let the goat escape," lamented Hailstone, "but it's better to put up with the loss when powerful force is about, for Doggalon is not traveling alone."
"We know Doggalon has his wife with him," Greencoat interrupted, "and he's got a young scamp of a son named Bator. Of course he's not traveling alone."
"You misunderstood me. For your sake, I stayed up all night, and by doing so found out all you should know."
"Speak up," said Good Fortune, "but not more than two words."
"I shone the lantern into Doggalon's face," began Hailstone, "and I said, 'Do you want to leave us?' 'Yes,' he replied, 'this is a good opportunity.' 'No doubt you want to travel with the Prince of the Balins and the Living Buddha,' I asked. 'Yes,' replied the wretch, 'I'm traveling under their protection.' Then they all set out by the light of the stars, and the prince rode beside Doggalon as if he were his friend. But I didn't see Bator. Yet, as your excellencies do not wish me to say more than two words." Hailstone was silent, and Greencoat also remained silent, but they could hear him panting. And Christian, who got more sand down his neck, noted that Greencoat had sat down on the Kong.
"I don't understand all this fuss about Doggalon traveling in company," said Good Fortune. "Of course you don't," snarled Greencoat, "but it can't be helped. My business would suffer."
"You're at that again," scoffed Good Fortune.
"I do understand that you cannot risk friction with the Living Buddha, but I also understand that I'll get no money and that I'm hungry. Hurry up, Hailstone, and get a breakfast for four grown-up men."
"At your service, sir. I'll hurry, I'll run. The fire is lighting, and the millet is—"
"Millet!" shouted Good Fortune. "You dare to set millet before us? Get us rice, or—"
Christian and Big Tiger could hear no more, for Bator made them an urgent sign to get out of the hole. One after the other, they emerged silently out of the darkness, shook themselves, and straightened up. In the east, there was clear daylight over the snow-clad hill of white stone. A rose-pink aurora surrounded the hilltop, making the cold snow look warm.
"If Blessed Camel only does not roar," said Bator anxiously when they reached the corner and looked around cautiously to see if the coast was clear.
"He's coming," said Christian. "I hear him."
"He opened mighty gate," said Bator. "If only he doesn't shut it again," whispered Big Tiger.
"Men," said Bator, "we take now sorrowful leave in haste. I ride away to my father. You go quickly back through gate."
"Goodbye," said Christian, bowing.
"I wish you good luck," said Big Tiger. He said no more, for he saw how much it was hurting Christian to lose their new friend.
"May your way be peaceful," cried Bator. After two paces, he turned back. "You make heart joyful if you write letter very long about Ring and Greencoat, whom you must kill soon, and Car with one eye. Write all exact to Bator, Torgut Tribe, Etzingal, with Grandfather Naidong."
"Bolna!" cried Christian and Big Tiger, and together they ran to the gate of the Inn Joyous Prosperity, which, fortunately, was ajar. They slipped in, climbed unobserved into the truck, pulled off their felt shoes, and slipped into their sleeping bags. They sat up again when they saw over the courtyard wall the head of a rider wearing a fur cap. The head bobbed up several times and disappeared again.
"May your way be peaceful!" shouted Bator. Then all was silent, and the first rays of the morning sun spread in broad streaks over the silent desert.
"Are you frightened?" asked Christian solemnly.
"I'm frightened, Kwee-chan.
But that will pass over. In front and behind us there's an abyss. We know it, but no one must see that we know."
"Are you very frightened, or only a little?" Christian inquired.
"Not very much, and not very little," said Big Tiger. "We must be brave like the old men of the mountain. It can't be helped."
"It's hard to be brave," said Christian.
"Not when you have to," said Big Tiger. "You'll see. And anyway, there are two of us."